Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. You know, one of the sad realities of our world is the number of people who suffer deep loneliness because no one seems to care for them. King David was very familiar with that experience. He once said, "I look for someone to come and to help me, but no one gives me a passing thought. No one will help me. No one cares a bit what happens to me." In a moment, Ken brings us part one of One Another.
Hi there, everyone. It's good to be with you. Have you ever walked into a room full of people whom you do not know or recognize and really feel uncomfortable and lonely or left out because nobody acknowledges you and there seems to be no familiar face that you can go to and talk with? It's one of the strange anomalies of life that we can be surrounded by people and be in a very crowded place and yet feel extremely lonely. I've entitled this series of two talks, One Another, because although we are uniquely made as individuals, we also need others to make our sense of belonging and being complete. And nowhere is this more important than in the community within the church. So one another are two very critical and important words for the Christian and for the church. We do well to remember and to focus on the one when we are trying to promote unity and to prevent disunity. But we also do well not to forget that there is a second word appended to this, and that's the word another. Because without others around us, there is no significance or relevance in talking about unity or the one. So remember the one, but don't forget another. I'd like to begin by first turning you to a place in the Psalms, which talks about this sense of being unacknowledged and unrecognized. This is in Psalm 142. It's a psalm that David wrote when he was hiding in a cave and seeking refuge from Saul and his army who were pursuing him for his life. Let me read that psalm to you. Psalm 142. I cry out to the Lord with my voice. With my voice to the Lord, I make my supplication. I pour out my complaint before him. I declare before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. In the way in which I walk, they have secretly set a snare for me. So David found himself hemmed in on every side, and he was hounded by one whom he had tried to help in the past. And now we come to verse 4, which is the significant verse that I want to focus on. Psalm 142, verse 4. Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. This is a very poignant verse, which expresses the predicament of David and the feelings that he had at that time. He was feeling really fearful and lonely and low. And out of the depths of his loneliness and lowliness, he cried out, "Look on my right hand." Now the right hand is the place of help. That's where you find hope and refuge and power. At any one point in time or place, there are actually many such needy and lonely people out there around us or next to us. And unless we are conscious of them, we'll just bypass them as another face in the crowd. But often all they need is some acknowledgement of their existence. And that can mean so much in a time of extreme need. Because what it says is, "I see you. I know you're there." Even David, who had known such companionship and loyalty from those who followed him, experienced such a deep sense of forsakenness and loneliness in a time of need like this, when his spirit was overwhelmed within him. As far as he could see humanly around him, there was none to help. For that was the real conclusion and the sad fact that stared him in the face. Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. And we find those two troubling words repeated twice. No one, no one. And that's the precise opposite of our title, which is one another. One another. What an awful feeling it is to have no one. And what a blessed place to be in to have one another. But when David found no man around him, he found God. Where refuge failed him, God became his refuge. For he said in the very next verse 5, I cried out to you, O Lord, I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, and you shall deal bountifully with me. Now what I would like you to do for a moment is to put yourself in the shoes of the one that others around you might look to for help. And people will usually look for help from the ones who are nearest to them or who are known to them. And if we are to be in the place of help for others, to be their man or woman on their right, to be their helper or carer, we must learn to be always aware and conscious and open to those near or next to us. And we need to acknowledge their presence. And this can be as simple as greeting the one next to you, in church for example, and especially when you see a new face, or perhaps a familiar face, but now with a harried and worried look. So we need to develop some sensitivity for the presence of others and their need. And the opposite of such acknowledgement is apathy or indifference. I find the most penetrating and poignant part of this verse is the last part of that verse 4, which cries out that no man cares for my soul. Now, if we are not the person in need, but if we are the onlookers, we are part of the crowd that surrounded and that looked upon that person in need but did nothing, then it becomes a searing indictment of our indifference and individualism. We have generally been taught to be polite and to mind our own business, and that is generally a good and a right thing to do. But clearly, this does not apply when things are wrong or when people are dying without Christ and heading to a lost eternity. If that was the situation, then it's no longer a matter of politeness, it's selfishness. When a need is apparent or urgent, then minding others becomes our business because it is our Father's business. Think about how great an indictment this would be on us when we hear such cries that no man cared for my soul on the day of judgment for sinners. Have I been near to or next to you, but I did not acknowledge you? I did not extend my hand to help you or to care for you. I had some good news with me, but I kept it to myself. It was in my power to help lift your burden, but I did not lift a finger. I thought I was minding my own business, but in so doing, I failed to mind my Father's business. These are the searching and searing questions that I would like to raise right at the beginning. Now let's move to the New Testament in the Gospel of John in chapter 13, which begins what is sometimes referred to as the upper room discourse or talks that Jesus had with his disciples on the night before he was betrayed. There were quite a number of things that he talked to his disciples about on that last night. And these were recorded for us in the next few chapters in John's Gospel, all the way through to John chapter 17. John's Gospel does not go into the details of the events relating to what is commonly called the Last Supper, but rather he touches on the significant things that Jesus wanted to speak to his disciples about. And he begins right off here in chapter 13 with two important things, one by demonstration and the other by instruction. The first is about serving one another, and the second is about loving one another, in that order. And we are going to begin with the first one today, serving one another. This has to do with the incident of foot washing, and that was a powerful demonstration of what it means to serve one another in humility. Let me read to you from John chapter 13. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil, having already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel with which he was girded. Then he came to Simon Peter, and Peter said to him, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, "What I'm doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "He who is bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not all of you." For he knew who would betray him. Therefore he said, "You are not all clean." So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." That's the account or the narrative of the incident recorded in the first part of John chapter 13. It was a common courtesy in those days for the host to have the feet of the guests washed when they came into the house, especially for a meal. And that's because they wore sandals and the feet tends to become very dusty from walking the streets when you come into the home. Now that task was customarily done by a servant or a slave. But that was the whole point that Jesus wanted to bring out, that we are to serve and to be a servant to one another. It was a common and a small task, nothing big. It was a servant's job. Since the upper room was made available to them, they were largely left to themselves with no actual host and certainly no servants around to serve them. And the last person you would expect to do something like this, if it was going to be done at all, was for the master and the leader of the band. If it's done at all, we would expect it to be delegated to one of the other members. They would probably argue among themselves, and some fair means would have to be found, like doing it on a rotational basis. But instead of that, Jesus himself just quietly and simply rose from the supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, girded himself, poured water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. While his disciples looked on first with utter amazement, and afterwards, I'm sure, with subdued shame. This was not a one-off action. It's not something that he did only for the sake of showing and proving a point to them. It was part of the whole fabric of his life, his entire disposition towards life. And we read about this in Philippians chapter 2, about what it means for the Son of God to become the Son of Man. Philippians chapter 2 verse 5 says this, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it to be equal with God." That is to say, he did not consider his Godhead as something to be hung on to, something to be grasped as a right in itself. And here is the great verse which is so relevant to his action there. Philippians 2:7, "But made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bond servant, and coming in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross." So he was simply acting out what he truly was on the inside. This is what Jesus, the Son of Man and the Son of God, would do, because he had come to humble himself, to make himself of no reputation, and to take upon himself the form of a bond servant, which is why he did what he did. naturally and easily. It wasn't something contrived or difficult to do. So here we find Jesus beginning with something very practical. In verse 12, he asked, "Do you know what I have done to you?" It's about doing. So he started with doing and he taught by example. And the whole purpose of this is in verse 15, that you should do as I have done to you. See, the whole emphasis is on the doing. Again in verse 17, "Blessed are you if you do them." This is not something philosophical or spiritual. Instead, it's something menial and practical which could easily be passed over if no one else bothered. I suppose the disciples probably wondered and looked at one another, wondering who would take the first step to do this. In all probability, they didn't expect any one of themselves to do it. They might have wondered who Jesus might ask or instruct or delegate this job to. It's not a big deal. They could simply do without it, since nobody else wants to do it, and everybody had a right not to do it. But this was to be a prelude to the lesson on love, which Jesus was to talk to them about later on. The Lord didn't start with something theoretical or spiritual, but instead, He started by showing them something very practical and tangible. They could see it, they were touched by it, because He washed their feet individually and He dried their feet individually, and in so doing touched and moved their hearts. So He demonstrated first and then He instructed. He was leading them to love and preparing the way to teach them about love, that to love is to serve. To love is to do something for another as well as to do something with another. It is to take the initiative and do what no one else might want to do or bother to do, but which needs to be done or should be done. It's not doing or giving in order to get or to get back, but for the good of the other. In Galatians chapter 5, verse 13, we are exhorted this way by Paul, "For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another." We have been set free in order to serve, and here it explicitly says, this is the way we should serve one another. By love or through love, serve one another. The two are inextricably linked, and this forms the bridge to the next section that we will be considering tomorrow, loving one another. But it's interesting to note Paul talking about serving in relation to liberty from sin, and he speaks of this in another place in Romans chapter 7, verse 6. And this gives us further insight as to the nature or the spirit in which we are to serve. Romans 7, 6, "But now we have been delivered from the law, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of the spirit and not in the oldness of the letter." We have been saved from sin and given liberty from the law, so that it no longer is something external to us, but it's something that the Holy Spirit, which is given to us and resides in us, enables us to fulfill. This is the newness of spirit and the liberty of spirit with which we can serve one another. We don't do it because we feel morally obliged to or to satisfy some legalistic requirement. Jesus talked about this as part of his teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, Jesus said, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Jesus put it as a very practical principle, and it's couched in the positive, not in the negative, unlike how this so-called golden rule is also taught in other religions or philosophies. Notice it's not, don't do to others what you do not like them to do to you, but rather in a proactive and positive way. Do to others what you would like them to do to you. Sure, they could have done without the foot washing, but would you like to have someone wash your feet and be able to relax and have a nice dinner with clean feet instead of dusty feet? Well, if that's something you actually would like to be done to you, why not just get up and do it for others? So that's the rule for action. If I would like this done to me, then I should take the initiative to do it for others. It's a very simple, inbuilt guide to action. Nobody needs to tell you what you should do or should not do. And notice that Jesus referred to this as the law and the prophets. That is, it is actualized not through the letter, but through the liberty and the ability that the Holy Spirit gives to you. John has something further to say in his first letter, written much later when he was much older. And he no doubt had this in mind, what Jesus had spoken to them about on that last night before he was betrayed. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 16, "By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. And we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren." Verse 17, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth." To serve one another in love requires us to lay down our lives for the brethren. This does not necessarily mean that we have to lay down our whole lives physically, once and for all, but it's through little bits of our life and repeatedly throughout our lives. Laying down our lives for the brethren means laying down our rights to ourselves, laying down our time and energy and privacy, perhaps. We are to love in deed and truth, and not only in word and tongue. So it means serving one another by doing things honestly. People are always surprised when they are offered help genuinely with no strings attached. Begin by focusing on one thing that you can do for one person first, not many. Find a need in someone else other than yourself and fill it. And as Paul says in Galatians 6:10, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." And as you go about doing this, may you be refreshed by the Lord's presence continually and be reached by His word.
To paraphrase the words of Jesus, "If you love me, prove it by willingly serving one another." Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow when Kenneth brings us part two of One Another. Before we leave, however, I would love to hear from you, and here are several ways that you can be in contact. You can send us a text message, 9431-3813. You can send mail the old-fashioned way, the mailing address, Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road, Post Office, Singapore 915714. You can visit our Facebook page. That's where all of the in people are hanging out these days, because there you can leave us your views and catch up on some of the other updates of the program right at our Facebook page. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, to listen to the program online. Also, we have launched our very own iPhone app, and that will allow you to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.